You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Two great University of Miami luminaries. Although in the last couple of months you've done nothing to help the program, only dissuade big-time boosters, have failed to congratulate me on formally joining the Golden Cane Society.
Did you get an NIL deal from LifeWallet? What happened?
Yeah.
Oh, right.
Yeah, well, Danny Boy Kane turned down the $12,000 on the merits of him not wanting to let go of his disability benefits, so I am stepping right in. Ruiz family, hashtag the time is now.
What is happening right now with you and John Ruiz? Can we leave this alone? Can
with
we
me stop and John
it?
Ruiz?
All of it. Billy and John Ruiz, you and John
well,
Ruiz.
Billy was wrong. Billy was wrong. All of these NIL deals held up to the scrutiny of the University of Miami.
Sure.
The University of Miami feels pretty confident that in a couple of months' time, that money will be legit and we have ourselves a big time booster.
Hang on a second. How many?
Because the SPAC that was supposed to be public in the month of January is probably, you know, there are delays.
Executed NIL deals have been presented to UM compliance and approved?
They do this with someone with a background in compliance.
That wasn't even close to this.
I was very specific.
Look, the Ruiz family contends, I don't know the update from last week, but the Ruiz family contends that they all have held up to the scrutiny and been approved. So. In your face.
First of all, the University of Miami, and as are any of the universities in this state, are uncertain about what authority they actually have under this new Florida NIL law, meaning other than kind of giving it a cursory review and a rubber stamp, they don't even know what authority, if any, they have to. They can't just unilaterally cancel or revoke.
He'll stop at nothing until he discredits the great Ruiz family.
I don't think that
he's a living legend. I know that from his YouTube channel. He self-produced a documentary about himself called John Ruiz Living Legend. It's on his YouTube account. Diana Diaz produced it.
Like Scorsese could have been moved.
I don't think are allowed to go in your face until some money, not money that he doesn't yet have that he's going to have in months.
2 months. Yeah.
Until the money is actually in Miami accounts, I don't believe there's any in your face.
There's been a lot of positive momentum to the reputation and legitimacy of the great Ruiz name.
Mike talking about this is like Chris Whittingham defending Inter Fort Lauderdale. It's like they're both on the payroll of the people that they're defending. I have no dog in any of these fights.
Whoa. Mike is not being paid.
No,
Mike's
getting he'll get an NIL deal with LifeWallet.
Look, I'm presently considering what LifeWallet has put together. Not exactly sure what LifeWallet is, but I don't think it matters.
I have one simple question. Where's the money coming from? Because all I care about is a bunch of kids earning this money, because they've earned it as far as I'm concerned and deserve it, but get to keep it and get to maintain their eligibility to boot.
I cannot believe you are taking
the priority
and are literally giving voice to a half-assed crazy conspiracy theory that collectors will come to Tyler Van Dyke looking for their money.
The priority of a university after or perhaps tied with education is to protect its students. We have seen in the past, time and again, how the University of Miami in particular does not effectively insulate its student athletes in particular from predatory boosters. We've seen it happen. I'm a historian now. I'm putting my historian hat on. I'm speaking about the facts and the track record of this university and its failure to protect its student athletes. I'm not saying that's what's happening here. I'm saying that we need to consider. I understand in a party town, a skeptic is a buzzkill. Mm-hmm. I get it. I'm the fucking buzzkill.
Your skepticism has been earned. It's been stated.
We don't
need to keep covering it, though.
How about we just have fun?
Everybody's the great Gatsby in Miami. Everyone's nouveau riche. It's not like New England. What's your name? Who's your daddy? What's your legacy? Where's your money coming from? I know if you go into a party and there's an open bar, nobody goes, hey, who's paying for this? No, you order 10 f***ing drinks. I get it. And as long as the party is raging and the booze is flowing, nobody cares where the money comes from. I care. That's all. I just want to know where the money's coming
time
from.
Of the season.
Okay, let's move on because you guys have been very passionate about this, and there will be a lot of time to be passionate about it. I love the idea of Life Wallet being, hey, John Ruiz, let me see your wallet. What's in there? And he just says life, and that's all that's in there. Is
right, but Billy's got it as 25 to life, and I don't appreciate that.
Listen, I just don't want to see a bunch of student athletes get an NIL deal with one hand and a grand jury subpoena with the other.
Oh, come on. Get out of here, man. Stop.
Right, because we've never seen anything
Stop
like that.
Stop being such a skeptic.
Let me tell you right now, I understand these NIL deals are shady everywhere. There's these 501c3s, there's various shell companies all over the country making these deals. I get it. It's a mess. But what I'm saying is that in Alabama, I'm going to go out on a limb and say it's some guy that owns a bunch of car dealerships in Tuscaloosa, a guy that owns a chain of successful barbecue restaurants, maybe some sports agents. We'll know where the money comes from. I just want to know where the money comes from that these kids, that these students are taking.
Burn it all to the ground, Billy Corbin. It doesn't matter. Engulf it in flames, and you can't start a fire.
The university,
you cannot start a fire without
start
a spark.
We didn't start the fire. The University of Miami, okay, has been the subject of clawback litigation from bankruptcy trustees, from Ponzi schemers in the past, Nevin Shapiro, Alan Rothstein. The University of Miami, if they're forced to write a check for $1 million to pay something back, I don't give a shit. The university is good for it. They have enough money from their Medicare fraud at the hospital. That's fine.
How dare you?
I don't get what I'm saying is I don't care about the administration having to pay back some money in the past, which they have done in the past. It's always these kids that get in trouble for taking a steak dinner, for taking $80 here, $100, and they wind up having to
they're
pay.
Not
but now we're
in
talking about we're now talking about five figures.
Rest it's easy.
Not, we're not just talking about these kids having to pay back $100 or $200. We're talking about real money.
You guys
now.
Are not going to agree on this. How about we just wait? We shelve it.
Yes.
You will have plenty of time
Thank
to
you.
Argue about
Voice
this.
Of reason.
I don't know how we're arguing. I didn't even bring it up.
Your skepticism. What do you mean you didn't bring
it
up?
I didn't bring it up today.
Man. You're just sour.
Let's talk
about what?
Let's talk about you are a skeptic. Again, your skepticism has been earned. Miami leads the world in corruption, and the Miami program has not earned the benefit of the doubt.
Don't put this on our program, please.
On some of the protection of athletes from unscrupulous
predatory writers out there with an agenda
Poor
to
shit.
Protect football in the South.
Again, he's now attacking history and facts.
Here's a fact. You is back, baby.
That's not a fact.
Go Canes.
Let's go ahead and move on to some other things that are happening locally. I got bothered again this week when I saw the boat show. They're going to they're destroying manatees. It's already an area. Like, what are we doing? There are daily frustrations around here, but let's start today with Hialeah. Hialeah.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to treat Hialeah as a punchline there. Sorry.
Hialeah is funny. Hialeah will make a lot of people laugh. Hialeah as interesting.
Ciudad de Progreso.
As interesting a city as we have in Miami. I don't know what you would identify. You know the history of the city, all of its areas. I don't know what you would call the most interesting part of Miami.
Oh, that's a tough one, man. I mean, there's a lot of, you got 34 municipalities here to choose from in addition to the unincorporated areas and a lot of shady corners and a lot of shady angles. I will say Hialeah has the unique distinction of having not one but two mayors indicted by the feds. It also has the distinction of having not one but two different mayors who are part of the what they call the shadow banking system. They are loan sharks in the shadow banking system. They make these private loans that they then charge usurious fees for. One of those mayors actually lied about it to the Miami Herald. This is one of my favorite stories about Hialeah of all time. The mayor, a former police officer, he's the previous mayor, Carlos Hernandez is his name, and he lied to the Miami Herald. Well, he told the Miami Herald, I should say, and the El Nuevo Herald that he was not a loan shark in the shadow banking system. Unequivocally, in quite graphic terms as well, told them what to do.
What a great sentence.
Yes, I am not a loan shark in the shadow banking system.
I don't even know. You're going to have to explain to me and the audience the shadow banking system.
It's just they're loan sharks. They go out into the community and they do personal loans and they charge people usurious rates, like upwards of 36% on these loans.
Mafia would do.
100%. And so he says, I'm not a... And again, in colorful Spanish profanity and English profanity, tells Jay Weaver of the Miami Herald, a spectacular reporter. Rest assured, if Jay has his byline on it, he got his facts straight and his ducks in a row. This guy denies it. Then he gets subpoenaed by the feds because the previous mayor, Julio Rubana, is on trial for being a loan shark in the Hialeah shadow banking system. So who better to get than his successor, the current mayor, and also a fellow loan shark in the Hialeah shadow banking system. I just like saying that. Loan shark in that.
It's a great
Hialeah,
it's a great sentence, a great phrase.
Irregardless, as we say in Miami, in Hialeah especially, he testifies under oath that he is in fact a loan shark in the shadow banking system. So somebody files an ethics complaint against him for lying to the Herald about it, because now he's under oath. He's compelled to tell the truth. He's not going to commit perjury, and admits, held a press conference cursing about the comunistas at the Herald lying about him being a loan shark in the shadow banking system. He admits it under oath. Someone files an ethics complaint and he gets fined for lying, but he gets fined twice, Dan. Do you know why?
No.
Once in English and once in Spanish. He lied once in English and he lied once in Spanish. So they doubled the fine, which he then proceeds to go to Home Depot.
I don't think that doesn't sound fair to me. Double the fine doesn't sound fair to me based on doing it in two languages.
He lied once in Spanish and he repeated the lie again in English.
But it's still the same lie. I feel like the lie doesn't, it doesn't matter what language it's wrapped in. It's the lie.
Well, he gets the last ja-ja because he goes to Home Depot and buys some orange buckets. You know, the orange Home Depot buckets. In Miami, we usually use those to hide stacks of $100 bills that we then kind of like, you know, put into the wall for safekeeping. He pays the fine in person in pennies in those Home Depot buckets that he brings in, and they tell him to go pound sand. They said, go bring us a check or something. We're not taking your dumb shit pennies. So he did have to eventually come back with the money.
Would Hialeah get your vote on the most interesting of the 34 that we have in Miami? The history of the 34, the richest terrain, you as a historian and documentarian, belongs to which municipality?
It's incredibly compelling. Hialeah, upwards of over 97% of households speak Spanish at home. You have the first Cuban mayor in Raul Martinez of a major city in all of the United States.
Selling suits out of the back of his car.
Yeah, it's a colorful, fun place. 70% of them voted for Donald Trump. They escaped the tyranny of Fidel Castro to come here and vote for another wannabe authoritarian strongman. It's a complicated place. I don't want to just talk about the Florida f***ery of it, but it's like, it's compelling. It's really interesting. It's not just, a place to make fun of. I think it's a place to study and analyze. I think it's a fascinating case study.
Is it now going to be, because it's hard to explain, a lot of people listening to this do not know Miami. They're listening to it nationally. They're fascinated by all of the weirdness that is in Miami. But as we see our real estate market boom, as you see that our infrastructure is not in any way equipped for anything that's happening in Miami, whether it's killing manatees or putting buildings on top of each other, because the amount of building going on right now downtown mortifies me.
Yeah.
Is Hialeah going to now be something that is viewed, even though we in Miami know it's a little bit of an armpit for this city. Is it going to now become a real estate empire?
I don't want to call it an armpit. I think that's unfair. I think it's home to a lot of middle class and working class Americans and Cuban Americans, people who work very hard. It also is the number one city in the country for Obamacare, a lot of Medicare. I would argue socialism, but to each their own. I'm sorry, they would argue socialism in Hialeah. I would say popular social programs, but that's the problem, is that you have this affordable enclave just west of the most prime real estate of Miami in Miami-Dade. And so what you're going to have is invariably gentrification and development. We talked about last week, there was an entire apartment unit who had their building bought out, and then they went in and raised some of the rents 65%. These are people on fixed income, you know, working class people.
I had no idea that any of this was legal, the raising of rent from one month to the other. But I didn't know until recently, because the prices have exploded so much because of the amount. I got to assume it's the amount of San Francisco and New York money. We've always
supply
had
and demand.
We've always had the money of the world, but now a whole lot of people working from home have noticed the inefficiencies in going into work, and they're like, wait a minute, if I can do this remotely, why don't I do it where it's warm?
Work remotely from paradise, sure. And so the city of Miami saw the highest rent increases in the entire country, nearly 40% in the city of Miami. But of course, that affects all kinds of disparate areas of Miami-Dade County, including Hialeah, where I always say, you know, in Miami, we don't have reality, we have realty. That's what we have. Everything's a real estate hustle. You want to look at a soccer stadium deal. You want to look at what mayor of Miami Beach and the city manager are up to here. You want to know what the mayor of Miami's up to. It's all a real estate hustle. That's what it always, always is. And in this case, you have a development of a 2 8-story luxury condos in Hialeah that the realtor, who misspelled Hialeah, by the way, in his or her ad, refers to Hialeah as the Brooklyn of Miami. I don't even like that's the whole gag. I'm waiting for the laugh track to kind of kick in.
Well, but you corrected me on armpit, and I'm trying to explain nationally. I guess maybe you did it better than I did when you're talking about medium income and working class. But it's a bit hard to explain, given that I still get lost in Hialeah just because none of the addresses make any sense there.
Yeah.
And it's just I don't even know how to describe Hialeah. My father worked in Hialeah his whole life. I did some growing up in Hialeah, so I don't say armpit affectionately.
You too wrote a song about it called "Where the Streets Have Three Names," because like it suddenly, instead of, it goes west, so suddenly you're on West 49th Street, but it's also Northwest 103rd Street, but it's also so and such and such Memorial Drive, and it gets very confusing. Everything in Miami-Dade is actually on a pretty reasonable grid. You can look at the address and find your way to a place. The numbers are the cross streets, and then it's actually kind of fantastic, except in Coral Gables, where suddenly they're named for streets in Spain and not on the grid. They're also on these little bricks that you can't see, these little bricks sitting in the on the intersections, and that's because they actually don't want you to know how to get your way. They don't want outsiders in Coral Gables, so they don't want you to actually be able to find your way around there. But in Hialeah, just all of a sudden you're driving on a street you think you know you're on, and all of a sudden it has two new names. Yes. You have no idea where the hell you are, but it is not the Brooklyn of Miami. Nobody calls it the Brooklyn of Miami unless you're trying to hustle real estate there. It is much more akin, I've heard it called the Staten Island of Miami, perhaps, but never
no
the
water
Brooklyn
there,
of Miami.
Just canals. Like, no, there's no, we're not near in Hialeah.
Canals, executive motels with heart shaped pools and adult movies and stripper poles in the room. Walmart wouldn't even build there. They went to neighboring Hialeah Gardens because, like, we're not putting up with this shit in the city of Hialeah.
Hialeah Gardens is one of my favorite names for a city around here. Like, that sounds lovely. Gardens, the gardens of Hialeah.
And Miami Lakes, you know, which is basically just Hialeah North, but they hate that, by the way. Don't tell anyone in Miami Lakes that they live in Hialeah. They're like, no, we don't. There's a whole canal, you know, with dragons in it separating us.
And a moat.
Yeah, a moat. And it's hysterical. But Hialeah was actually a Jewish neighborhood. Historically, there's still one of the last Jewish delis in all of Miami-Dade County is there. Stevens Deli by Cush, Udonis Haslam's grandpa, literally works there and slices the corned beef and the pastrami. It's an incredible historic place. It's been there since 1954.
Good food in Hialeah.
Great food in Hialeah. But not only Cuban food, as you'd expect, but Jewish deli food as well. One of the best liquor stores in Miami, M&M Liquors, which on its sign, it's famous. Every week, the owner writes a new poem. And it's usually like a pretty politically charged, funny kind of a sign. Definitely not consistent with the, we'll say, traditional demographic or politics of Hialeah, but it's always very colorful. I don't know. It's a really interesting place. Would I suggest anyone ever goes there or moves there or lives there? I would say no. And the reason is because, like, it is one of these kind of towns that's almost frozen in time.
Well, and it's all factories and mud, and they're like, it's
a lot of affordable single family homes. That's the most important thing. It is ultimately, I think, a working class city. And that's what this gentrification and this influx of demand for housing, that's what that's going to screw up. And the people of Hialeah are going to get priced out of their own city.
You've been delighting about Miami coins dip. You've been lamenting what a crock this whole thing is with Francis Suarez. And for those of you who haven't been listening every week, the mayor, Francis Suarez, son of Xavier Suarez, I believe Billy calls Francis the most corrupt mayor in the history of this region's politics. Miami coins dip. You've been enjoying it.
No, not at all. Not at all. Not schadenfreuding out on it at all. And I'll tell you why. It is down 85% from its all-time high in September. Its all-time high, mind you, was 5 cents. It's now worth a fraction of a penny, about 0.008 cents. The point is, if you invested $1,000 at the all-time high in September, you now have $150. Okay. And of course, all the crypto bros will go, buy the dip, bro, buy the dip. You can't afford to buy the dip. You've lost all your money in Miami coin. This is a shit coin that's being peddled by the mayor because it's not a real cryptocurrency. There's Bitcoin and then there's shit coin. And this is a shit coin.
Mierda coin.
Mierda coin. Yeah. And so it's not a truly decentralized, democratized cryptocurrency because there's all these people in between, including the city of Miami, by the way, who are profiting from the mining of the coin, and nobody accepts the coin. It's not a currency that you can trade in any stores or any, you know, yes, you can maybe trade it for Bitcoin and then be able to transact, but it's not a real cryptocurrency. I've been warning about it while the mayor has been shilling for it. The mayor actually was featured in a New York Times story this week about the rise of the crypto mayors. And this is all in light of the fact, as we know, last week, Bitcoin crashed. Crypto crashed and erased more than $1 trillion in market value. So Miami Coin obviously is going along for that terrible, terrible ride. But in this rise of the crypto bros, the rise of the crypto mayors article, the New York Times, first of all, I mean, this guy's always embarrassing himself. Listen to this quote. I have to read this quote verbatim because it's so embarrassing. Every time he opens his mouth or tweets something, he humiliates himself in our community. Quote, every time I would talk about crypto, my analytics would go through the roof, Mr. Suarez, 44, said in an interview. The analytics went crazy. I love, first of all, how they say that he's 44 years old there, because you'd think he was 14 based on the inanity of that statement. This is a mayor of one of the poorest cities in the United States of America. We are facing existential crises in affordable housing, in sea level rise, in transit, in quality of life, in parks, in pollution. And this guy is in the New York Times talking about my analytics, bro. I mean, it's f***ing embarrassing, okay? And then he tells this funny anecdote. You ready for this funny anecdote? He got a call from Gary Gensler, who is the chairman of the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission, who has called for increased scrutiny of crypto. And Francis says, it was kind of funny. He said, I think I should have done a little bit more homework. It was his own way of saying that I really knew what I was talking about. Oh, dude, it's so embarrassing. First of all, the chairman of the SEC was probably saying that Francis should have done a little bit more homework. Nobody thinks Francis has any idea what he's talking about. All you have to do is listen. Francis teaching the chairman of the SEC about currency trading is like me teaching LeBron about basketball. No, it's worse. It's worse. It's like Nevin Shapiro teaching Sam Walton about the grocery business. It's like Milli Vanilli teaching Adele how to sing. It's a con man and a fraudster telling, like, oh, I really opened the eyes of the SEC chairman. By the way, totally misread that call. I believe the SEC chairman was making a friendly call to warn the mayor about his crypto hustle, because the city of Miami has been the subject of SEC investigations and sanctions before. In fact, under the prior mayor, Tomas Regalado, there was a whole scandal about the finances of the city, the misrepresentation of the financial security of the city and its bonds. And Francis Suarez criticized the previous mayor for that. And now I think he's falling into the same exact trap. If he's this oblivious, he's a major liability for the city. And if he's not this oblivious, if he's just conning everybody, then, I mean, that's even somehow worse.
He put the lie in liability. Roy, can we get a daily message to Francis Suarez inviting him on the podcast? Can we set an alarm here? I know we've invited him, but I just want to inundate his office daily with the invitation to appear on this, because I've not talked to him since he wanted to talk to me on air publicly, but refused to sit down with Billy. And I think it's because he fears that Billy will undress him. Let's get that daily to the mayor's office, because I would like to have that conversation with him. Coming up next, we have Dr. J. Michael Butler. He's a professor of history, a distinguished professor of history. And we want to get into what happened with him and just everything that's happening that feels a little like censorship and whitewashing, literal whitewashing of facts and historical facts in a second. But I'd be remiss if I did not allow Billy to counter Greg Cody's allegations.
Who?
Greg Cody of the Miami Herald, his allegations. I think that he said that you suffer from short man syndrome or small man syndrome. Greg Cody is attacking you.
Well, I am so petite that I don't even hyperventilate when I plug my headphones in. So he's right. What was he like? Is this the right hole? Now, to be fair, Greg Cody hasn't had to stick anything in a hole since he conceived Chris. But if in fact he was there at the time.
God, come on.
Small.
Come on.
Small, Dan. He works for a daily newspaper in 2022. This is a man that has never accomplished anything. He's never built anything. He's never started a business. He's never created a job. He's never created anything. He's just written the same mediocre to atrocious column over and over and over and over again for 90 years. It is a sad existence, leaving behind an instantly irrelevant body of work that nobody will ever remember or reference. What could be smaller than that, Dan? But now, you know what? Now I feel like I'm beating up on a stegosaurus because Greg Cody went extinct 20 years ago and he doesn't even know it. Next.
Oh, my God. That was brutal what he did to him. And his sperm did produce the legacy that got us $50 million.
So. Let's go to Maury for the results on that, Dan.
Oh, my God. That's an accusation that is unfair. We will get Greg Cody's response, breathless though it may be.
And his DNA.
On Tuesday.
Hey, everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there. I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
They're presented by DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code Dan for a special offer when you sign up. That's code Dan, only at DraftKings Sportsbook.
We have a Florida bill that has been approved by the Senate committee. It shields people from feeling discomfort over historic actions by their race, nationality, gender. Billy Corbin, please tell us why it is we are talking to the Dr. Michael Butler, J. Michael Butler, that we're talking to today.
Dr. Butler is the Keenan Distinguished Professor of History at Flagler College in St. Augustine. He is the author of Beyond Integration, The Black Freedom Struggle in Escambia County, Florida. Last week, he was scheduled to teach a training for Osceola Public School elementary school teachers about the long civil rights movement. I believe that was the title of the presentation. It was going to be last Saturday. And ahead of that event, they got notification that the event would be canceled. I think on Wednesday, actually, ahead of the Saturday event, they got a notification it was canceled. And the doctor tweeted about it because they were told that there may be red flags in this presentation by a historian about the civil rights movement, that critical race theory might come up in it. It might be a minefield. And they have a committee, believe it or not, a review committee to search for CRT in curriculum. This isn't, incidentally, wasn't even being presented to students. This was being presented as a teacher's training. And so it turns out that CRT maybe stands for civil rights training. See, it's not about necessarily the specificities of critical race theory, which is, as we all know, is a college theory taught in, not even in college, but I think in law school. But this is about the sensitivity of white people being uncomfortable about learning the real history about civil rights and slavery, particularly in a state where our flag resembles deliberately, I believe, the Confederate battle flag and has our own reckoning with our Jim Crow South rules. And
keep your politics out of it.
I'm
just
sorry.
Bring the doctor in. Just well, bring the okay, doctor.
No, trying to tighten it up. Jesus
the historian,
Christ.
The
oh,
fact,
are you here?
The fact Mike, maker.
Every time,
like, just,
every time I see Mike, I think the same thing. I think,
I
why do you
here,
still have hair?
You're blabbering, got me out
why
of here.
Why do you still have hair?
The segment's almost over.
I'm trying to think of which bad celebrity impersonator the doctor's supposed to be on Cameo that you've now hired.
Hollywood is supporting Mike Ryan.
Hollywood, Florida.
Will you
quit wasting the doctor's time and introduce him here so that people can hear what he has to say about facts that are not soaked in your agenda?
Doctor, let's talk about facts. Let's talk about history. Thank you for being here. I think first and foremost, before we talk about what your presentation was actually going to be about, what was your reaction when you got news that the event was canceled as a historian?
Oh, as a historian, number one, it's my pleasure to be here. I appreciate the invitation. I think that we have an obligation within the academy to explain the importance of these topics. And you guys are absolutely correct. Unfortunately, because I study the civil rights history and have for many, many years, it doesn't surprise me. The point of history is not to make people in power feel comfortable. It's not supposed to make the people in the majority feel comfortable, because history is not comfortable. It's messy. It's complex. And the ramifications for teaching evidence-based fact has always been an element that is under siege somewhat. So, you know, I kind of went through the different stages of realizing that this is off. At first, I was shocked, then mad, and then decided to do something about it. And that was tell other teachers what the threats are for teaching fact-based history to our public school teachers. This was a seminar that was for K-8 teachers in underrepresented schools in this county. So students who need to know the facts, who need to have role models, who need to know about the trials of people like Harry T. Moore and people like Reverend C.T. Vivian, they need to hear these stories so that it's a history that is relevant to them. It was canceled because of red flags concerning critical race theory.
So Osceola Schools is just south of Orlando, so people have some geographical reference. It has a population of about 400,000, which is nearly two-thirds Black or Latino, a medium household income well below the national median. It's 52,000 in Osceola. I want to talk about what you were going to talk about, because there's a chilling effect here. There's a fear amongst public school teachers and officials. It's not having a chilling effect on the First Amendment, which infers that you could express your views and your opinion. It's having a chilling effect on facts, on the transmission and teaching of actual history and information to educate not only students, but teachers in this state. So what were you going to talk about at this presentation last Saturday before it was canceled?
It's real controversial stuff. It is the long civil rights movement. And there were three sessions for the teachers, and they were titled The Long Civil Rights Movement, which is basically to emphasize the fact that the civil rights movement didn't begin nor end with Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. He is seminal, make no mistake about it. But the emphasis of that lecture was to say, let's go all the way back into the 1800s. Let's talk about, you know, Reconstruction. Let's talk about the Florida Constitution of 1885. But more importantly, let's talk about Plessy versus Ferguson, 1896, separate but equal. That's what the movement rallied against, legalized separation. I intended to take that through World War II with the Double V program, with the idea that African-American servicemen came back to fight a Double V, victory against Nazism and victory against Jim Crow. The second seminar was on the master narrative. Now, what the master narrative is our general understanding of the movement between Brown and Memphis, or Montgomery and Memphis, 1954 to 1968. It's the greatest hits of the movement, right, Billy? It is your Montgomery, and then there's Albany, and then there's Little Rock. And that's out of order, actually, but you get the drift all the way through the probably passage of 1965 Civil Rights Act, or the 1965 Voting Rights Act. I'm still tweaking the presentation for time. But the last presentation, I think, is the most important. And it was titled The Movement Continues. And what the movement continues emphasizes is that after legalized segregation and after voting rights disqualifiers were eliminated, the movement changed. It shifted. It does not end. It evolves to target practices and the consequences of Jim Crow, like housing discrimination, like school resegregation, like, from my own research, that was kind of going to be the point of that third session, Confederate imagery and police brutality in Pensacola, Florida in the late 1970s. So those, you know, and the movement continues, ... was intentional.
Let me ask you about this, because we talked about Montgomery. Of course, there's Topeka. There's Alabama. We brought up a lot of places. But what about Florida? Florida is the South. I would argue still is the Jim Crow South. What do we have? What
would
reckoning?
You please quit arguing things? Allow the good doctor to give us fact-based information.
Well, that's what I'm asking.
On what he's trying to do.
I'm asking about what about Florida? You know, we mentioned a lot of other places and their civil rights reckoning. What about the state of Florida?
The state of Florida is a fascinating case study for how racial equality has been both fought for and resisted in America as a whole, right? You're right. We tend to think one of the questions that I often get when I present on Florida's civil rights history is that, number one, Florida had a civil rights history. Number one. And number two, why is Florida different, or is it different? Billy, I always lead with a stat that I think gives us context. And for the professional historian, context is king. I think David Sampson would appreciate that. From 1880 to 1930, Florida led the nation in per capita lynchings. From 1880 to 1930, Florida led the nation in per capita lynchings. That means it was more dangerous for an African-American to live in this state during that time than Mississippi. And that's not even taken into Rosewood. That's not even taken into the Ocoee Massacre. That's not even taken into account the violence that surrounded the presidential election of 1920, right? So that gives us the framework of, no, there is a civil rights movement in Florida. As a matter of fact, Paul Ortiz argues that Florida's was the first state-based civil rights campaign in the entire nation. So if we start with the premise that Florida is actually a model for Jim Crow, racial violence, and resistance, we can understand better how the past informs the present. And that's the starting point. Florida was a battleground for equality that had national ramifications, particularly in the way state leaders have tried to stonewall, delay, and frustrate those who want full equality.
I bring it up a lot, and I don't think I can bring it up enough. We're sitting on Ocean Drive right now in South Beach, in Miami Beach, arguably one of the most progressive cities historically in the country. And this was a sundown town as recently as the 1960s. There were no black people allowed on the beach here, and not even people working on the beach after dark, unless you were tagged and fingerprinted at the police department and had an ID badge that if, God forbid, you got pulled over by the police, you could say, I'm coming to work or leaving the beach now, you know, and that's Miami Beach, for crying out loud.
That's the image of the Sunshine State, right? In academia, we call it Florida exceptionalism. Because Florida is, quote unquote, open for business. I don't know where we've heard that before. But because Florida is a place for tourism and a place for the elderly to retire, a place for the space race and the mouse, that somehow Florida is immune to the social changes and movements that characterize every other state that surrounds us. And that's absolutely ludicrous. And it's historically ignorant, which is why I love to give teachers a factual background, not only of the movement, but also of the movement in their literal, sometimes, backyards. The first, quote unquote, civil rights martyr, the first NAACP official to be assassinated while in office for his work was Harry T. Moore in Mims. Most people don't know that.
This is not politics. This is history. Actually, I would argue the exact opposite of what people say, that we're immune to these changes. I would say we're on the cutting edge of these changes. The good doctor actually quotes me in the Salon article about this story this week.
I don't think people want to hear what you'd argue. Every week here, they hear what you'd argue. I think they're here for the expertise of the historian, who, again, is soaked in facts. You come in here wearing a Biden JFK Jr. T-shirt.
Well, I don't want to talk politics with the historian, although I'm sure he'd back me up on this. I want to say right now, anyone, how whacked out, crazy, deranged, conspiracy riddled mind you have to have, just some sick, twisted, broken brain putts you have to be to think that JFK Jr., who died in 1999, is going to run for office in 2024 as a Republican?
Is this,
that's ridiculous.
Is this you
he is
asking
the son
him,
of one of the most famous Democratic
you
presidents
asking
in history.
Him a question?
What I'm saying is, of course, JFK Jr. is going to run as a Democrat. It doesn't even make any sense.
Why?
How
you,
stupid do you have to be?
Why are you not asking him
crazy.
Questions? You do.
He's
you
going
sound
to
totally
run
nuts.
As a Democrat.
You sound crazy.
He's
Number
not
one,
going to run as a Republican. His father was murdered as the Democratic commander in chief of this nation.
Abraham Lincoln was a Republican, mind you.
JFK Jr. is not running for office as a Republican. That's what I'm saying.
You
what kind of QAnon brain do you have to think that
doctor,
that's true? He's running as a Democrat. That's all I'm saying.
This is the party of Lincoln.
Okay, I'm not going to be quoting the doctor quoting me, but I am going to quote the doctor from
it's
the Salon article.
It's the party of Lincoln and the segment of Butler.
Okay.
Did you know Thomas Jefferson owned slaves?
Can I just say something real quick, please, guys?
Did he do a cameo for you? Did Thomas Jefferson do
Will
a cameo
shut
for
up?
Sally Hemings
shut
do a cameo
yes,
for
doctor,
you?
Doctor, please.
I'm sorry.
Turn off his mic. Turn off his mic.
I am so glad that the rest of the nation now sees why I rejected his request to take my course via Zoom this semester on the civil rights history. This is why, Billy. This is why.
Doctor, in the Salon article, you say that this was not just what happened to you last week. You were, by the way, talk about cancel culture. You were literally canceled last week just in your effort to educate teachers with real history. But you said it was not just the culmination of Florida's year-long demonization of so-called critical race theory, however vaguely or inaccurately defined that is, but also the realization of something that you warned your students about years ago. Quote, "When our former president used the term fake news, I told my classes to be aware of what's coming next. And that's fake history. If there's a topic that can be censored today, that means there's a precedent for censoring of any topic in any state moving forward. And that should scare all teachers." Also, there's a conversation at the legislature about giving body cameras or, you know, surveilling teachers, video and audio in all of the classrooms. What is the fear here that you are sensing from fellow educators and historians and your concerns, not politically, but historically, your concerns about the effect that this is going to have moving forward in the state of Florida and in the rest of the country?
Wow. That's a really, really complex question in the way that I could answer it, right? In graduate school, my minor field was Weimar Nazi Germany. And one of the characteristics that I always sort of used to understand how that past played out was that there were so many people there who said Germany is the most civilized nation in the world. It can't happen here. It can't happen here. You see it over and over. When in Nazi Germany, well, even before Nazi Germany, Billy, in Weimar pre-Nazi, when the government started incentivizing citizens to turn on each other and report what they're teaching and report who they're consorting with and report what they're doing in their spare time, that's when the path to fascism was paved the first time. So there is a lot of fear. And one of the reasons that I wanted to share my story, because it's not just my story, this is not a Mike Butler story. This is a war on historical fact and truth and relevance story. At the academic level, we say that we have a degree of freedom, that there is academic freedom. And there is to a degree. Public school teachers don't have that. It's scary, particularly during, as Roy pointed out last week in this very same program, what do we do during Black History Month? Now, do we have to teach that the civil rights movement ended? That it's over, that that's a thing of the past, so that we won't feel uncomfortable about the consequences of segregation.
I heard a state lawmaker from the city of Miami say that it ended when Barack Obama became president, that that was it. Ileana Garcia said that what more proof do you need that it's over, we're all equal, civil rights movement was won, than Barack Obama's two terms as president, right?
That demonstrates the power of history education for our public officials.
On that note, I fear that we are not years but days away from book burning. We're already censoring books and taking them out of the libraries and public schools in Texas, in Virginia, in Florida. Dr. J. Michael Butler, the Keenan Distinguished Professor of History at Flagler College in St. Augustine and the author of Beyond Integration, The Black Freedom Struggle in Escambia County, Florida. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate the dialogue, guys. Y'all keep up the good work, except Stu Gotts.
I appreciate the dialogue as well. I'm sorry that Corbin took half of your allotted time with his dialogue.
Sorry, but can we ask one final question, doctor, because you are an expert Mike, should he stop the shave, or should is it time for him to pay up and make good on his wager?
How do the kids say it today? Hashtag I stand with Mike Ryan.
There is no historical parking spot. You got to give that man his money.
Don't pocket watch.
Well, this is not a great kind of thing.
Make sure this man is taken care of.
You're hijacking the platform.
With Mike Ryan.
Okay, all right.
There is no historical fact to support that position, Doctor.
I won the bet by a lot.
Mike, turn off his microphone.
I am calling the good people at Keenan about revoking your distinguished professor's microphone.
Thank you, Doctor. I appreciate it. We appreciate it. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, guys. That was a lot of fun.
I could turn off Billy's mic the whole time.
He didn't even know he could do that.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.